The Bob Siegel Show on KCBQ is sponsored by Bob Siegel.
The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Primetime Advertising Corporation and the law offices of Matthew Simone.
Recurring themes on The Bob Siegel Show can also be found in his Washington Times Communities column, Forbidden Siegel Talk.
It's time now for The Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
Oh? So, you'd like to believe in God, but you wonder why the only way to search for God is in the church. Well, my friend, the reason you're wondering about that is because it's not true. No Christian who understands Scripture would have said that to you. If a Christian did say that to you, then they don't understand Scripture. There are many ways to search for God. There are many ways for God to make himself known. Sometimes it's done through the arts. If it's good art, how would we know a good book from a bad book, or a good book from a bad movie, or a bad movie from a good movie? Well, you could spend 20 to 30 grand a semester going to some prestigious college or film school, or you could instead opt for the cheaper but no less accurate education, film critic Mark Boobian. Mark, welcome to our program.
Thanks, Bob. Well, I feel like I'm a good deal all of a sudden today. Thank you, Bob. So this is the beginning of summer, it looks like, officially. Summer just started a week ago, even though Hollywood tends to start summer earlier and earlier in the year in terms
of
movies.
Thanks to George Lucas.
Yeah, right. So, well, now summer kind of is starting in March, March 24th
March?
With Hunger Games.
Oh,
that's when it starts now for the movie season. But where we really start to get rolling around July 4th, that's the either the first or second biggest, depending on the year, weekend of the year for Hollywood. So that's why we're doing the show today, and that's my favorite time of year is the summer in terms of movies. And this year, I think, is probably the best year for a moviegoer like me who enjoys the summer blockbuster so much. And since I like science fiction especially, it's just turning out great. It's almost like there's a new science fiction movie every week.
And it seems that, would you say that the animated and science fiction movies get released more in the summer? That's more a summer affair. Although I think animation's still a lot around Christmas time.
Right. It's those are the big times of year.
Christmas time is where they're hoping for an Academy Award nomination.
Right. So you'll have a little bit more.
People remember the end of the year movies.
Right. And the Christmas is the other. It's either the 4th of July or Christmas weekend that they vie for being the top weekend of the year for movie, for money making for the movies.
So if they don't think they're Oscar caliber, but they just want to be a blockbuster,
it's probably
summer. It's summer.
Yeah.
It's more summer.
Right, which is why Spider-Man is never Christmas. It's always summer.
Now,
which,
why are they making another Spider-Man movie so soon? It seems, I mean, I guess.
Why are they starting over so soon and going back to the beginning?
I understand that Tobey Maguire would want to move on and we'd replace him. They did the same with Batman. I guess they're going to do the same with Superman. They're kind of like jump-starting it and showing the first episode again. It seemed. How long ago was the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man?
Not long ago. Well,
it might have been a good 8 to 10 years ago, but it seemed.
No, it's not. It's only been 3-4 years. So.
Oh, really? That short?
Yes, it's that short. Okay, so what happened?
And they were good. They were popular.
Yeah, they were. And I don't know. I'm not looking forward to the Spider-Man, but let me answer your question first. The Sony Studios, because they're having a big push for 3D, and Sony's a big corporation. They're not just about movies. They're about everything. TVs, Blu-ray players, Blu-ray itself, audio, everything that has to do with home entertainment. So when something new comes out and Sony's behind it, they want to push it across all, everywhere that they can, across all fields that they're into. So with the new insurgence of 3D, because Sony has so much invested in it, they wanted Spider-Man, which they own, to be a 3D movie. So after the last Spider-Man movie, they immediately approached Sam Raimi and said, you've got to make the next Spider-Man movie a 3D movie. And they gave him 2 years to
but
do it.
But couldn't they have just made movie for the 3D movie
yeah,
instead of
that's what they
movie
were
going to
do. Okay, so Sam Raimi is the director of the previous three Spider-Man movies. And so he was approached for Spider-Man 4.
Right. Okay.
And it was the whole same cast as before. So they've and he said, well, he can't do it in their time scale, or he didn't want to do it in 3D. It was a mix of the two or one or the other. I don't know exactly where he fell, if it was just the time or that he didn't like 3D. But because he wasn't going to do it in 3D, they fired him and then they fired everybody else. They just said, we're going to start over from scratch because, you know, I don't know why they fired everyone else. They fired the cast.
I'm not sure if that's such a good idea. Well, I can see if the other one was 20 years old. But
right. Like Batman was almost 20 years before the next one came out. And the Batman's every so often anyway.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And so it is a big risk. And
I mean, it looks like it'll be good from the previews I've seen, but still, maybe. I'm kind of looking at it going, we just saw this, and it was already good.
Right.
I think remake a movie that was bad. When it's a bad movie, but it had an interesting story, that's when you think, wouldn't it be wonderful to make a remake? But that's not how Hollywood works.
Right.
Only if it was a blockbuster do they want to remake it and make it into even a bigger blockbuster.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I'm really kind of mixed on this new Spider-Man because well, first off, I didn't really like Spider-Man. I'm not a big Spider-Man fan, so
didn't like the movies that much anyway.
They were okay. Well, actually, thematically, I really liked the second Spider-Man movie because it delved into what it meant to be a hero. And it was Sam Raimi's kind of this wacky guy who I think of Evil Dead and him doing funny, silly movies. And he was that Spider-Man, the second Spider-Man movie, actually had some very serious elements to it, which was impressive. So I'm not expecting any of that kind of thing in this upcoming movie. It's a whole new guy. But the problem I have with it is when I've watched the previews because I'm not really caring that much. But Spider-Man's a big fat jerk. I mean, he comes across as being the meanest guy ever. He's rude to people and he laughs at them and everything. He makes fun of them. So it's just not appealing to me. He's not an appealing character. And even when I saw the first previews, I was scratching my head saying, what is it that I don't like about this guy? Something's wrong here, and I can't put my finger on it. It took somebody else to key me in. Our friend Richard actually pointed out that he's being snarky because snarky is the new thing. Snarky. That's to be funny and make fun of people.
Okay, write that down, everybody. Snarky. That's the new thing.
That's the new thing. But it doesn't work when you're a superhero, I guess, because it really makes Spider-Man into a big, fat jerk. So I'm not really excited about this movie because of the way they characterize him. Now, the other thing is the actor's coming out of the Facebook movie. He wasn't the star he played. Let's see. I don't know the character name that he played.
Yeah,
but
I didn't see the Facebook movie.
He was the best friend of the main character. And in that movie, everybody's snarky and a jerk, too. So it's almost like they said, let's take the Facebook movie and make Spider-Man just like that. So they hired the guy, you know, one of the guys in the Facebook movie, and there he is. So, and I didn't like the Facebook movie because it was too in your face and just too awful too, just
the in your Facebook movie.
Good call, Bob. You're on your toes today. So yeah, that's not my kind of thing. I don't like it when they're intentionally cruel to other people in a movie, and that's what the Facebook movie was like. That's what Spider-Man is coming across as. Who knows though? I mean, it really isn't fair to judge a movie by the preview, though they do try to give away as much as they can in the preview. So it's a tough call right now. And I'm not a big preview guy, so you kind of take what I'm saying now with a grain of salt. If you're really a big Spider-Man fan, you probably will like the movie. Hopefully I'm wrong, and you know, maybe he's snarky and then learns his lesson that snark is bad. We'll see.
But now, are you saying that the Spider-Man in the previous movies was also snarky?
No, he was not.
This is
because
I didn't remember him being.
Yeah,
that
he
way.
Was a really nice guy.
I'm surprised
kind of
you would watch
this,
the preview at all because you're not one who will usually have anything to do with.
Right,
the preview.
That's how little I care about the Spider-Man.
Well, okay,
I saw
the less Mark cares about the movie, the more it increases the odds that he might watch the preview.
Right, yeah. Exactly. So,
but
obviously,
boy, if you dare say a word to him about the movie that he's planning to see, you better run.
Yeah,
fast.
Watch out because, like, The Dark Knight, I've not seen any preview for that.
And they are. Oh, they're making a. That's the next one of that.
That's right.
I guess they're keeping. I guess they're keeping Dark Knight in the titles rather than Batman.
Yeah, now because The Dark Knight was such a.
It was Batman Begins, but then the second one was called The Dark Knight. So I guess that's See, that's the way these producers think. The term Dark Knight sells. The term Batman, not as much, even though it is a Batman movie.
Yeah, it sells. But, you know, though I think that if we got a comic book aficionado in here, they would probably say that the Dark Knight's the right term, because this the current form of Batman in these movies comes from a series called The Dark Knight. So it fits. So it's okay that they changed the name.
Well, and I like the name Dark Knight better.
Yeah,
Batman reminds me of the stupid 1960s television show Batman with the one-word lyrics in the song.
Right, yeah, right, the one
word. I wonder how much money they paid that lyricist. That was just genius.
If only we could be paid that well.
It's in the tradition of the people that brought you the pet rock. You
know? Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah. So, the Dark Knight's going to be the next big movie. Like I said, that's in 2 weeks from now. So Spider-Man's coming up for the 4th of July weekend, and then the next big movie is going to be the Dark Knight.
Well, you know
what
this means. We're going to have you on again soon to do all these.
Yeah, so we'll talk about those. But I'm actually looking forward very much to the Dark Knight. I'm a little concerned because I think it will be difficult for the movie to live up to its hype. You know, everybody's expecting it to be this amazing, great movie, best movie ever made, and I don't think it's going to be able to pull that off. It's going to be kind of like The Matrix 2, where there was a large group of people that were just disappointed, and then it kind of took on its own thing where it became this, you have to be disappointed with The Matrix if you're anybody. So hopefully that won't happen with The Dark Knight, but I'm very much hoping that it still is a good movie. So we'll see. So I did see several movies that we could talk about today, not coming attractions, but let's talk about some of the movies that are already in the theaters. There's a couple of good kids movies, and then, of course, a great science fiction movie that I had been looking forward to for years was Prometheus, and a wonderful movie. We'll talk about that last. First, I wanted to talk about Madagascar. It's the third installment of Madagascar. This is one of the very few kids movies coming out this summer, but it was actually a good one. I was really happy with it, and this is one of those movies. It's made by DreamWorks. It's one of those you've got to see it in 3D. DreamWorks has the best 3D. So if you go see Madagascar, pay the extra money because it's worth every penny to see this movie in 3D. They are really, really the best by far. I did like this movie. I didn't like the second Madagascar movie. I liked the first one. Just because of all the references.
Now, what is the theme of Madagascar? Is that the thing about the continents coming together?
No, that's Ice Age.
Oh, that's Ice Age. That's shows how much I watched the animated.
Yeah, and it's the continents splitting apart, actually,
right,
in Ice Age.
Of course, not coming together, splitting apart.
Yeah, so, all right. Well, you admitted to not watching it, so that's okay. But, yeah, Madagascar is the four friends, the lion, the giraffe, the hippo, and the zebra. I got them all. Don't ask me all the names. I'll fumble over them. But anyway, I do know their names. They're out. They escape from their zoo in the first movie, and they end up in Madagascar in the wilds of Africa. And then they're trying to get home. And the second movie, they're not home. The third movie, they're still trying to get home, but they go through Europe this time instead of Africa. And one of the strengths of their movies is they've got these secondary characters. The penguins, they are the penguins. They're not just called the penguins. They are penguins, believe it or not. And there's four of them, and they're hilarious. And they really focus on these characters for much of the first half of the movie. And I felt that that was a real strength for them because these guys are so funny. And they've really done a lot with the main characters of Madagascar by now. And so to kind of go off and emphasize a few other really good characters, I think was to their advantage. So I really enjoyed that aspect. Plus, I've always liked the penguins, so I have nothing bad to say about them. They're awesome. This also had some really good themes. I think that it was exploring the notion of friendship. Now, all the Madagascar movies, that's sort of the theme of the movie. It's about friendship because it's four animals who are very close friends, and they're kind of all thrown for a loop in one way or another, and it's how they can remain friends when things go wrong. And this movie expanded it again, where it was about their friendship, kind of them acknowledging that they're so close that they would call themselves a family, but also expanding their friendship to another group of animals and their relationships are growing beyond just the four of them, the four main characters. And I also found that very interesting because it introduces new, there's kind of like new blood coming in. And Martin Short voices the Seal, one of the new characters that we see, and he's very funny as well. So it, they also have good talent behind the animated characters. One thing that I really like about the movie is there's this tiger in the film, and he kind of is the conflict of the movie when they meet him. He becomes the conflict because he's the conflicted soul, and you really, I was really taken with him and immediately wondered why he was so frustrated with life, and he really was frustrated with life. I actually could, I could really relate to him because I felt that way myself. And here, this is a tiger. It's an animated character in a kid's movie. And here I am relating to him like it's an R-rated, serious movie. I mean, it was really well done that I could connect with this animated character. But fear really cost him his talent. He had this act that he did in the circus, and it went bad one time, only once. But it went so badly that he couldn't bring himself to do it again, and he became angry, resentful. He rejects all his friends. He's bitter and unhappy. He treats everybody badly. Even the new guys, the Madagascar gang, there he walks all over them and just wants nothing to do with them. And I like that because, you know, when times get tough, at least for me, and I think this has to do with probably a lot of people, is, you know, when times get tough, it's common for us to sort of abandon our friends. Not for our friends to abandon us, but for us to turn our backs on our friends and say, this is my problem, not yours. I'm going to fix this. You stay out of my life. This is my deal. So get away from me. And that's what this guy, this tiger, not guy, tiger, was doing in the movie. And again, I really related to that because I could connect with him as a person. The beauty of this is that what really brings the tiger back around, that reintroduces him to his friendship, to his family, gets him back into living life as he should, is that Alex, the lion, forgives the tiger for walking all over him, and Alex actually wants the tiger to be better. He wants him to be this full person that he was before the tragedy in his life. And Alex has no reason to forgive him, no reason to care. Alex could boot him out of the circus, do his own act, and everything would be great. But instead, he's compassionate, he's forgiving, and he brings the tiger back in. And it's all really done as an act of love. I wouldn't necessarily call it that blatantly in the movie, but if you really break it down and look at it closely, Alex is expressing one of the greatest graceful pieces of love as an example in a film that I've seen in a long time. And it's just really brief and really subtle, but it's a beautiful, wonderful thing. And isn't forgiveness really the ultimate grace?
And that's a great value for kids to learn.
Absolutely.
That's the target audience for these movies.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And like I said, he had no reason to forgive the tiger, but he does anyway. So it's just a great message, like you said. And believe it or not, adults can come away with something too, because look at me, I relate to this silly tiger guy. So, you know, be like me and go to these movies. Another really wonderful movie, my wife actually connected with this film more than I did, but I still love the movie. So again, adults can really connect with these children's movies because when they're well done, as Madagascar was, is Brave, the next movie.
No, that one I did see.
Okay, that's good. All right. That's a Pixar movie. A lot of people went to see that because Pixar, obviously the big hit in animation for the last 12 years. Every movie they've made for 12 years has been a success. So why expect anything less than something great from Pixar? So, and Brave was a great movie. I think it's not quite up to the same par as their other films. It's, you know, they're...
I didn't love it. It was a beautiful artistically. And, of course, I love the British Isles, Scottish Isles, Ireland, everything about the British Isles I love. So I love the music and the background. I thought it was a just a fair story. But,
right.
But I did enjoy it.
It was okay. One of the things that Pixar has been doing, and I noticed it in this film too, is they're breaking from the standard three-act film structure. And I, when we talked about WALL-E a few years ago, I pointed it out in WALL-E where it's just a very atypical, non-standard film. Brave actually was like that too. The movie really doesn't start until about it's halfway over, where the primary conflict begins halfway into the movie.
Yeah, it's almost like all act one.
Yeah, there. Yeah. The first half of the movie is building up the relationship between the mother and the daughter and showing you, not just showing you the good, but also the bad. It's setting up the conflict because the conflict does flow out of that relationship. So it's an important aspect, part of the movie to spend that time. But for me, it kind of detracted from the storytelling only because I really need conflict in a movie to get involved. So I was starting to get bored, you know.
Now, do you know much about the writing team, the people behind the screenplay or the book that it's based on? I was a little bit curious.
I don't think it's based on a book. Pixar does tend to write and direct as sort of a team. So I'm not sure which group of people were working on this. Andrew Stanton is typically one of the head guys with John Lasseter, one of the, you know, Pixar giants, one of the kings of the throne of Pixar, however you want to put it. But he was off working on another movie that didn't do quite so well, that actually turned out to be probably one of the greatest disasters Hollywood has ever faced. That's what? John Carter. He directed that.
Yeah.
So unfortunately, he chose that movie to not be at Pixar. And so I don't think he contributed very much to Brave. So it's too bad, but at least he's got a home to come to.
Well, I notice that there is another new tradition, and Brave was certainly an example of this. And that's, you know, you go back to the original Disney classics and a lot of others, the typical fairy tale of the princess who's rescued by the handsome prince. They're really turning that on its head these days. Like when I saw the movie Enchanted, and I loved the movie. I loved it. But I wasn't surprised when during the last scene the princess rescued the guy instead of vice versa. And I saw that happening in Brave. And I, now my antenna were out a little bit because Michael Medved gave it a not very good review. And he said, I don't want to give a lot away, but it's not a great movie for kids. So, of course, I'm watching. Now, I have to say, I didn't see that. I don't agree with Medved at all. There was certainly some violence in it, but no more than I've seen in all kinds of animated movies.
And, right. If the bear's scary, there's a big, mean bear in the movie that's scary, yeah, but that's it.
Any of the good Disney movies had all kinds of... I mean, Sleeping Beauty had some of the scariest scenes you've ever seen toward the end. Very demonic stuff at the end of Sleeping Beauty, but I still thought it was a very good movie.
Right, yeah. And that's intentional, though. In Sleeping Beauty, they were... referencing that demonic stuff to make it more scary. They intentionally
I didn't see what Medved saw, and I didn't agree with what he said, but I have to admit, because that put me kind of on red alert, I was watching for things, and I was wondering if in the tradition of what recently happened with Green Lantern, we were going to have this woman, since so much of the theme was I don't need men, I was wondering if this was going to be the first animated lesbian movie. Now they didn't.
Oh.
They didn't do that, but it did make me wonder. If we're being set up for a sequel.
I don't know because I
can't imagine them in the next. If in the next movie she goes and gets married to some guy, I think in the minds of the producers that would be undoing what they did in the first movie. So it makes me wonder, what are they going to do for an encore?
Okay.
If the movie makes money, they are going to make a sequel.
Okay, well,
make some kind of sequel.
First off, Pixar's only done two sets of sequels. They've only done the Toy Story movies, and then they did a Cars sequel. The only reason they did a Cars sequel was because John Lasseter himself demanded it.
Okay.
He said, I'm doing a Cars sequel. I love Cars, so I'm doing a sequel. And that was it, you know, because he's in charge. I really don't see Brave getting a sequel just because... Not just because they don't tend to do sequels, but also because this movie really is not the hit that the other movies have been.
I agree with that. So I didn't know how it's doing at the box office. If it's not a hit, they're not going to make a sequel.
Right. It's a hit. I mean, you know, in terms of anybody
but
else.
You don't think it's enough of a mega hit to warrant a sequel?
Right. Like,
not in the Pixar standards.
Right. Not in the Pixar standards.
Okay.
Very good. Thank you very much. That's exactly right.
All right.
So
somebody will come out of the closet in some other movie.
I really don't. I don't know. I'm not too concerned about that kind of thing right now. So, and I think that it's kind of atrocious, to be honest, if Michael Medved gave this a bad review because this had a strong female character.
Well, no, I don't think he was. I'm just saying, okay. I think he was concerned about the violence, but then it made me, I was going, well, what was Medved? So that made me watch for that. So I can't pin that on Medved.
Yeah,
if you watch any of the old, just like you said, Bob, you watch any of the good Disney movies, every good Disney movie has a scary part in it. They all do.
No, and, right. I don't have a problem with that. Everybody's always saying you can't have violence in movies. If it's good versus evil and there's a good conflict,
it's going to be a foregone conclusion.
Yeah. And I don't have a problem with the violence as long as the violence is destroying evil and doing something.
Right,
good.
And as long as it's not too over the top
I didn't think this was. So, in many ways, it's too bad I heard Medved's review first because it just, like I said, it had my antenna out all over the place, and I was looking for things that Medved didn't even suggest. So,
right. I understand. And you know, I actually did key in on the aspect that you're talking about where it departs from, if not completely goes against the grain of the previous princess movies. I didn't even think it was a princess movie, to be honest, because it was so different than the typical princess movies. And when I heard it referred to as a princess movie, the next Disney princess, I was like, what are you talking about? This is not a princess movie. But of course it is.
Again, I don't have a problem with that kind of movie. I hope they're not thinking we can never again make a movie where the prince and princess live happily ever after, because, you know, that's going too far the other way.
Right.
I think it's fine. I think it's very important for women to know that, you know, they can have identity and they shouldn't be getting all their identity from a man. But on the other hand, you know, a happy marriage is an important thing too.
Yeah,
so
that's
true. I think we need both.
Well, I think Disney, just a few years ago, I think they, one of their more recent princess movies, I think kept that tradition alive, but in a different way. The Princess and the Frog that came out in 2009, kind of gave it a different spin in that it took place in more recent times, but kept that traditional princess movie and they live happily ever after thing intact.
Yeah, they did.
So I think that's a really good example of doing a different spin on a princess movie, but not, you know, turning it on its head. And I think they'll probably do that again. They kind of did that with Tangled again, too.
Yeah, they did. I mean, they didn't. Yeah, that's true. And there's actually a sequel to Tangled, a short film where they show the two of them getting married. But both of these movies, though, both of these previous movies that you're talking about both have very strong female characters, and they're working their way towards departing from the traditional and making it a more modern type of princess. And I think Brave just was really blatant about it, where she says, I'm fighting for my own hand. I'm going to win myself. So it's really blatant. It's not subtle at all, which is okay. That's the way the story is.
It's okay for this movie and this story, but if they feel obligated to start making all their movies with that theme, that's where I would have a problem.
Yeah, that's the way culture is now, though.
Well, but it becomes uncreative after a while. But when they say, we're going to do this creative spin, and then it's the same creative spin
then
it's not that creative. Okay, I'm here with film critic Mark Boobian. We are going to get on to Prometheus, which probably a lot more of you saw than saw Brave, so we will be right back.
This is Lori K. Lewis, a frequent co-host on The Bob Siegel Show, Talk Radio 1170 on KCBQ. If you have questions or comments during this radio broadcast, please call Bob at this toll-free number, 1-888-344-1170. Again, the number is 1-888-344-1170. We'd like to hear what you have to say.
This is Bob Siegel. They say a man's home is his castle. So when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call W&S Electric Incorporated. W&S specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, W&S takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for W&S Electric Incorporated, license number 480539, W&S Electric.
Looking to build your own website without a lot of cost and trouble? Hi, I'm Bob Siegel, here to tell you about Web Studio. Web Studio allows people to create their own websites simply and easily without knowing HTML. With Web Studio, you avoid the learning curve of front page and the expense of a web designer. Web Studio has 14 different galleries that contain graphics, sounds, and everything else you need. For more information about Web Studio, go to webstudio.com.
If you enjoy listening to The Bob Siegel Show, check out Bob's weekly column for Washington Times Communities. Bob is also a regular contributor for San Diego Rostra and San Diego Newsroom. And don't forget his website, www.bobsiegel.net, S-I-E-G-E-L, bobsiegel.net. Here, you can download past radio shows, read Bob's many articles about Christianity, and get information about Bob's books. That's www.bobsiegel.net.
Back to our program. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show, our theme, Christianity and its relationship to politics and pop culture. Pop culture edition today with film critic Mark Boobian. And if you're wondering who that other voice is who's been jumping in, that's Nick, our board op. Nick does that when we do these review programs, and I usually introduce him, but he's done it so much I've gotten used to it. So I think I was just assuming the audience knew who he was, but it was pointed out to me that not everybody might have known. So that is Nick. Nick's kind of a movie buff, and we always enjoy hearing his comments.
That's right. Okay. And let's see. Now, Bob, you mentioned the creativity kind of going down the tubes, possibly.
Down the tubes. It's just when somebody does one creative thing, what Hollywood tends to imitate more than be creative. So the minute
that's
something
going down the tubes, Bob.
Yeah.
I would call it going down the tubes.
I have no problem saying, look, it's usually the princess rescued by the prince, so let's turn that on its head for this movie. But when they go along in the next one, they go, okay, having the princess rescue the prince or not needing the prince is now in, so let's make all our movies like that. That's where it goes down the tube.
Right.
It's not the theme. It's when they just exploit the theme to the point where they run it out until something else becomes popular.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. So that is a potential danger, hopefully not with Pixar. One thing to point out about Brave, in that they're doing something very unique in Brave, is there's a mother-daughter relationship. And that's the key conflict in the film and the thematic base. There really haven't been a lot of animated kids' films about the mother and daughter.
Usually the father and the daughter, perhaps.
Or the father and the son, exactly.
Right.
And it's also the rebellious teen in a very rebellious mood. She's very rebellious in this film. And again, that's not something you tend to see in a lot of kids' movies because it's probably taboo. It's just very difficult to make a movie like that without offending people, so
and
they
it worked
stay away
making
from
her Scottish, because the Scottish and Irish are the crustier people.
The hotheads.
Those are the lasses with the red hair and the rebellious ones.
Right, you know? So there you go. They could get away with it that way. So
exactly.
But Dad, that's something that my wife keyed in on, and I didn't really notice it right up front, but then when she pointed it out to me, I was like, yeah, let me think about it. Yeah, there haven't been a lot of movies like that. So I think that to Pixar's credit, they still are doing things that are unique and different.
And that's great. So next time, let them turn something else on their head and surprise us again.
Right.
See,
I doubt that they'll do another
This wasn't a surprise, because I've seen them turn this thing on its head in a lot of other animated movies of late, and so I wasn't that surprised to see the theme of a girl that doesn't need a guy. That we've seen that.
Yeah.
Not to this degree, but we've seen that in other movies.
What are your guys' thoughts on the one of the frequent criticisms I see of the movie, and I didn't really see too terribly much for the most part. I thought the only characters that were really, really developed was Merida and the mother. and everyone else is just kind of in the background.
But Scottish guys hanging out at the house weren't too developed. All they did was get rowdy and swing on chandeliers.
Oh, come on. Isn't that what all they are about anyway?
Yes, that's true. But
it's like watching Braveheart on acid. You know?
One of the criticisms that I keep hearing about this movie is that the story is not as developed. It's kind of thin, and I didn't really see that too much, but that's been one that I keep popping up everywhere. It's not as developed as a Pixar movie.
I thought the story was developed, so I would disagree with that criticism, but I would agree that with the exception of the mother and the daughter, the rest of the characters were not too developed.
Yeah, and I think Pixar tends to have a variety of very rich characters. Look at Finding Nemo. There were, what, 6 fish in the fish tank? All of them with unique personalities.
Oh, there were rich personalities, yeah, all over that movie.
Right. So, that's a great example. So that's what we have
stumbled upon racism against the Scottish, because the producers clearly thought all Scots were the same, and they portrayed them all the same.
What do Scots do? They fight and argue. There's like nothing else to say about
them.
That
line from Braveheart, yeah, that the King Edward says, the trouble with Scotland is it's full of Scots.
Right. Yeah. So that's Pixar's trying to say the same thing. Oh, my goodness. All right, well, we'll leave that up to other people to explore. Let's talk about Moonrise Kingdom. Not Moonlight Kingdom, Moonrise Kingdom. And this is a Wes Anderson movie. I'll just say something really brief about it because it's a very difficult movie to talk about because it's so unique and creative. Since we were thinking and talking about being creative, Wes Anderson is where you go for creativity. The movie was just out this weekend. And it's not one of those movies that's advertised a lot. It's really the independent movie of independent movies for the summer. I highly recommend the film. He's very funny, very wacky. The humor tends to flow out of things that happen in the movie in terms of it being a movie, not in terms of the story. So, for example, there are obviously many things are miniatures in the film, and there's a big flood, but it's really just a trough of water running down behind everybody standing there, and nobody's ever in danger, everything explodes behind them.
Like miniatures?
Yes, he does. So it's on purpose.
He's trying to make it look like an old cheesy sci-fi.
Not even that. It's just it works in this film. Okay. It's even hard to explain, but it's because it's obviously a set, and things are exploding and falling apart, and the characters react to it as though it's real. It's just a very funny thing. And there's another scene where there are 3 characters are hanging from the steeple, and the close-up is of the characters holding on to each other arm in arm as they trail down towards the ground. But the faraway shot is really like a mobile, one of those things that, you know, hang by strings, and there's 4 cutout characters, you know, that are just two-dimensional. So you see that from the distant shot, and it's obviously not real people. So those are the kind of humorous touches that Wes Anderson tends to put in his film. It's sort of very difficult to kind of describe this type of style. So I'll leave it up to you guys to go see the movie. It's wonderful. Lots of great things to say about family, love, acceptance, and highly recommend it. Always, Wes Anderson is always a good place to go for a fun movie. So we were going to talk about Prometheus.
Yes.
What is there to talk about? It was kind of like that. Did it ask many questions?
Now we should say, I know we sometimes it's impossible to review a movie without doing spoilers. So spoiler alert, Mark and I just can't talk about this movie without giving some things away. And there are some surprises.
I think this is full blown spoiler.
Yeah.
Review. So, there's just no way. So if you want to see the movie without spoilers, go see the movie. But, you know, we're going
to
give
tons
away.
You'd have to turn us off. But since Mark and I know we're more entertaining than any movie.
Yeah, just listen to us and
don't believe you have the guts to turn off the radio. We know you're going to be enticed and tempted to listen. This is done by the director of Ridley Scott, the director of Alien. Not Aliens, who was taken over by James Cameron. Mark knows how much I hate sequels. And
right, and there were 3 sequels to hate.
I did not like Aliens. I loved Alien because it was very original. By the time we got to Aliens, the creature popping out of every single body throughout the movie, we'd seen that. I mean, that was the big surprise in the original Alien movie. But this one is different because you don't realize it right away. While I'm watching this, I'm thinking, okay, I know it's the same director, but I'm going, boy, even though it's the same director, I'm surprised how much the style and the tone and the set and the gritty look of the ships, it just reminded me so much of Alien. And then I realize I'm watching, I wouldn't even call it's not a sequel to Alien. You really couldn't even call it a prequel to Alien. You could call it
a discovery
of the backstory. Because, and tell me if I'm wrong, Mark, it seemed to me that in the original Alien movie, when you see a skeleton of it, there's two kinds of aliens in the movie Alien.
Right.
There's the monster.
And then the creature.
And then there's the creatures that we never see, but they find this race of alien creatures who had been destroyed by the monster before humans did.
Yeah.
And early in the movie, the ship lands and they see this big skull and body and bones of what had been some other alien, and they see that there's some line that says it looks like he just crawled right out of his head or some line like that.
Yeah.
Or crawled right off the table. So we realize we're seeing an alien killed by an alien monster, but we never knew who these other aliens who had first been killed were.
Correct.
And we don't learn till very late in the movie that that's race of aliens is what this movie Prometheus is all about.
Yeah, basically, right. The discovery of that race of aliens. So, and yeah, exactly. And Ridley Scott on a DVD commentary about 10 years ago when I was listening to the DVD commentary for the movie Alien, he actually reveals that he always viewed the alien itself as a biological weapon that went wrong, a biological weapon that's so dangerous even the people that made it couldn't handle it.
Yeah, it's a creative being. It's not a natural being that developed.
Right. They made this weapon, and it turned on them because it was so dangerous and so unwieldy that it destroyed them. And that's basically what he says in this commentary. I've always wanted to go and explore this idea of this biological weapon and see where it came from. And when I heard about Prometheus initially, that he was making an alien prequel, I thought, oh my gosh, I hope that that's what he's doing. Then Ridley Scott actually said, I'm not making an alien prequel. Well, I think that was brilliant of him to say.
Technically, he's right, because it wasn't a prequel.
But what was good for me, who doesn't like spoilers, is I got to walk into this movie thinking, it's got maybe something to do with Alien, but he said it doesn't. So I get to have kind of my cake and eat it, too, where I get to be surprised.
You know, I think the most accurate description is he made a movie that was set in the Alien universe.
Yes,
in that story.
That is, and he really does give us the backstory or the fills in sort of some of the question of the root of the alien, but in a whole different parallel storyline.
So it didn't seem that this race of people who invented the alien weapon were much better than the alien they invented. They didn't.
Well,
of course, we don't know a lot about
them.
Right.
That's one of the questions. I mean, there's so many questions this movie asks, and this is one of the things I love about it. Now, it's written
by... Now, this one should have a sequel. This time,
This
time I would like it because it seems to have been written to call for a sequel.
It's
not a sequel just because it made money. It seems to call legitimately for another story.
Right. Well, the good news is it did make money, so there's reason for Hollywood to want to make a sequel.
Yes.
So that's important.
But there are artistic reasons for making the sequel.
Okay, so one of the two writers is Damon Lindelof. I don't know if I say his name correctly, but he's one of the primary writers of Lost.
Oh,
a TV show
that would explain a lot about why it was good.
And why there were so many questions asked and not answered in the film as well. So Damon Lindelof said that he wrote a three-part film, and there'll be two more. It's a trilogy. And maybe Ridley Scott said that. I can't remember who I heard that from, but it was one of the two. That's good news, and hopefully they do get around to making the rest of these movies, because I would love to see what their answers are for some of the questions. I hope they don't answer everything, but I hope they explore some new ground, because
instead of making Alien versus Predator and all this other junk that we don't need to see.
Right. Instead of exploiting the movie series.
Explore the theme instead of exploiting.
Yeah, exactly. So one of the key things that is the primary driving force of the film is that we discover at the beginning of the film that we were possibly created by this other alien race. Humanity is now in search of their progenitors, their creators, not God, but this other alien race that made us.
And that was a theme that 2001 explored.
Also explored. But
and
now
to
this...
a different kind of degree, Blade Runner explored it. Not exactly in the same way.
It's asking similar questions.
Similar questions. Human beings were making androids, but then it made the human beings kind of wonder who had made them a little bit.
Exactly. And that's a good thing, because that actually ties in very well to this movie. So the primary driving conflict, the inspiring factor that gets the movie started and everything that really flows is they want to this group of scientists wants to go to this planet far off and find who our creators were and basically ask them, you know, how did you create us? What did you do? What are we? Why are we here? All the questions you would want to ask of your creator, be that creator God or another alien race. Why are we here? What's our purpose? And that's what they want to do. So they go to this other planet. Unfortunately, they do discover their creators, but they're not quite as benevolent as they had hoped.
And they discover that their creators, after creating them,
want to destroy them. So humanity is out to be destroyed. And the alien was created in order to destroy humanity.
And that's got to be the worst weapon ever. I'd rather be crucified or have an atomic bomb blow up on top of me than have that slithery thing living inside of me.
Yeah, talk about that. And it's an effective weapon, too. I mean, you can see how it would get out of hand. We've already explored the alien to death.
I've watched horror movies for years. No movie ever scared me like Alien.
Yeah,
did. Of course, I saw it in Cinerama sitting in the second row because we got
when it comes out of his body.
And I'm walking, looking up there. Oh my gosh! And you knew something was coming, but you didn't know what it was going to be. And fortunately, none of my friends shut off their big mouths and ruined it for me. I had never seen anything scarier than that movie.
Yeah, it was pretty awful. I agree. And fortunately, there's not a lot of that kind of gory, horrifying stuff in this movie. This movie is really a much more of a straight science fiction movie on the edge of a horror.
There's certainly some of that.
Yeah,
boy, that
it's
scene
scary.
Where the lady was pregnant, and that was an incredible scene.
Yeah, that's a good scene. That's the goriest scene, I think, in the film, and it's very well done. But again, it's not really a horror type of thing,
but it was just very suspenseful. That was. You're just on the edge of your seat.
Exactly. So I really like that, because I'm not a horror movie buff, but so for him to kind of get a little bit away from the horror aspect of Alien and more into the science fiction element, I really enjoyed that. And there's so many references to Alien. Visually, the style of the spaceship, the interior of their spaceship matches from Alien. There's the android who bleeds the milky substance. Again, all the Alien movies have the android. The progenitor, the engineer's spaceship, the race that created humanity, their spaceship also looks just like from Alien, and they have this design of the body and the helmets and stuff that mirror what we saw in Alien as well. So there's so many references, and he did such a good job of being very strict within that context so that we really feel like we are in the Alien universe without necessarily being told right off the bat, because there's so many references to it visually and stylistically.
Now, Mark, what do you know about why Ridley Scott didn't direct the next ones? Does he not like those sequels? Would he say, try to imagine they didn't even happen?
He does not like the sequels. He did not like where Alien went after he was done. Now, he didn't write the Alien movie. He was the director. So,
did they have the same writers?
No, those writers actually never wrote another Alien movie until...
Yeah, these decisions are done around a big oak board table with people that smoke cigars and make money and not creative people.
The only Alien movie the writers were ever involved in, again, directly with direct credit, was it's the newest Alien versus it's Aliens versus Predators.
Oh, you mean there's more than one of the Alien Predator movies?
Yes.
Unfortunately, yes.
Good God.
Though this one's the better of the many of them.
I don't know which is the worst nightmare, the uncreativity of Hollywood or the alien popping out of the stomach. I don't know which is the worst nightmare.
Yeah. But anyway, the most recent incarnation, whatever it was involved Dan O'Bannon, who created the alien. Ridley Scott didn't like the way they went. Fortunately, he just did it his own way. He went back to the original and
well, I'd like to just imagine that none of those sequels exist.
I don't know. I liked
some
Aliens.
Of them, but, aliens
yeah,
it,
a lot
good.
Of people liked Aliens. I liked them, but you know, After Alien 4, you're just, okay, get us out
of after, here. Oh, yeah. And Alien 3 was just, no. No, you need to stop at Aliens.
Aliens was entertaining and not as bad as 3 and 4. However, it just still seemed unnecessary. It seemed right. like the point had been made in the first.
It's true. It's a good movie. It's not, I wouldn't say it's a great movie. And it's also kind of hard to, because of that dip in quality, it's also kind of hard to fathom that it's from the same guy who did the Terminator movies. Because yeah, I thought the Terminator true. Movies are great.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. It's more just a standard action
movie. And from the same guy that did the Titanic movie.
Yeah, okay. We don't have to mention that part, okay? I won't mention Avatar either. Okay, so, yeah, but I think one of the nice things about Prometheus, one of the nice things, that's not quite the right way to put it, but one of the astounding things about Prometheus is he's able to take the style of a movie from 30 years ago, make a prequel, have it fit in that same movie, and be as serious and as that kind of grim and dark, and without, like I said, it's not quite as horror elements, but it's still a very dark, grim, heavy movie to go back to that style and ignore all these other movies that were made with the aliens.
And with a lot of depth and well-written dialogue, and like you said, the really important exploration of what are our roots, where do we come from,
who created.
And I love the line, which is kind of an obvious line, but it still fits so well. Oh, we were just created by aliens, so now there's no reason to wear that cross. And she says, well, who created them?
Oh, she does say that in the movie. Okay, does. I missed that
he
line.
He says, you
so
don't
I'm
need
glad.
That cross anymore, because now you know you weren't created by God. You were created by these aliens. She says, yeah, well, who created them?
Right. Very exactly. good line. That is a good line. Because, again, they're asking questions. They're not giving us the answers. Because here's the answer. Oh, well, they were created us. Well, guess what? That raises even
and
more
And that's what
questions.
I've noticed. I've talked to my atheist friends about this. People that don't believe that there's a God still gravitate towards science fiction and try to explore the mysteries of the universe in that genre. And it's interesting how people will still raise those questions of where we came from.
Right. I think that's the fundamental question of humanity, because we all want our lives to be meaningful. We want to know why we're here. Once you ask, what am I doing here? Does my life have meaning? Once you're asking that question, inevitably you are ending up asking, who put me here? How did I get here? Because once you ask the why, you've got to ask the how. There's just no way around it. One of the things I really like about this question, too, and as you mentioned, Bob, it does kind of come full circle. You don't just end up there. And that's one of the things I thought about the movie. If we were created by aliens, what kind of questions does this answer? I mean, what does it tell us about ourselves if we're not created directly by God? Whether or not God exists, what would that say about us if we were created by aliens? What would that say about the meaning of life to us that's good? I can only think of it saying life has no meaning if we were created by other aliens. That's the only answer I can come up with. Maybe somebody else can come up with another answer.
Well, I could see them saying that, and yet, again, if those aliens were created by God and somehow God allowed them to create us, even in that context, perhaps some meaning could be discovered.
Okay, so but that requires God to love us.
Yes, he'd have to love us as much as...
Right. There has to be some investment by God.
Well,
so,
I've always said with this whole thing with artificial intelligence, people have ever said if we're ever able to create human life or an android that develops sentience, like the theme that we see explored by Asimov and...
And Blade Runner.
Those kinds of things. I would always say if we're made in the image of God and then we make something in our image, then that's in the image of God.
Right.
So I don't think that would mean that life is meaningless for those people.
Not necessarily. Right. And this is the question of the android's dream.
Of course, if we're created by these slithering things that create slithering monsters to live inside of us, perhaps there's less depth of meaning there.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Well, now the aliens were very human looking, just to point out. The alien... The progenitors, the engineers, whatever they're called in the movie that created humanity, they are very human. Because we were really, the way it's depicted in the film is they don't actually create us. They seed the world with their own DNA. And that's how creation comes about. So it's almost like they don't create us. We're still pointing directly to God. But Prometheus also asked the question about creation through not only our creators as humanity, but through parents and children, and then the question of creating an android, because we have got the android in the film, who's one of the best characters in the movie, also kind of stuck in this paradigm of where did he come from, what's his meaning. So we have that question asked there as well, the Blade Runner, the Android's Dream question.
And the name Prometheus, it comes from a Greek myth, and they gave quick reference to it in the movie, but I still wasn't exactly sure how it tied in.
That's another good question,
it
Bob.
He was a person that challenged the gods, and then he was bound. There was a legend.
Right.
But I wasn't quite, it could be maybe in the sense that they're viewing these aliens as our gods and we're challenging them.
I think that's the only tie I could see. That points to the question of why do the aliens want to destroy humanity? They don't answer that question
in the film.
That's
good that they didn't answer it. They probably will answer that or part of the answer in the next film. Okay, well, we ran the full gamut from cutesy kids animation to slithering beings that pop out of your stomachs and freak you out. Only on the Bob Siegel Show. Mark, we'll have you back again soon.
Bob.
We'll see you next week, everybody.
Bob Siegel Show on KCBQ is sponsored by Bob Siegel. Intelligent Talk, 1170 KCBQ.